Welcome to KUOW's Speakers Forum, a venue for spoken word presentations in many forms. We feature writers, artists, storytellers, and thinkers recorded at events around Seattle. I'm your host, John O'Brien. On this week's episode, the South Asian community in the United States has roots in Bangladesh, Bhutan, India, the Maldives, Nepal, Pakistan, and Sri Lanka. They represent one of the fastest-growing ethnic groups in the country. From 2000 to 2010, their population grew by 81% nationally. In Seattle, the increase was 173%. This past fall, KUOW presented a six-part series by reporter Liz Jones, Two Indias, Near and Far. In it, Liz explored a nuanced web of connections between the Pacific Northwest Indian community and the city of Hyderabad. Out of that reporting came the idea for Storyvalas, the first of a series inspired by the Moth storytelling program. Participants came prepared to tell a story if their name was pulled out of a hat. The result was a better understanding of people and places far away for some of us, but potentially close to home for many. Fittingly, the theme of this first event was Misunderstood. Storyvalas, an evening of storytelling, took place on May 3rd, 2015 at the Kirkland Performance Center. Presenters included KUOW, Tazvir, and Prathidwani. Thanks to Anna Tadashev for our recording.
I'm Liz Jones. I'm a reporter with KUOW Public Radio. And many of you in here probably heard a series we produced and we aired last year called Two Indias, Near and Far. And I was just thinking earlier today, it was almost the same time last year that I found out I got a grant to go to India and do this reporting. And it was, you know, a few days of elation of winning this grant, and then the panic set in of, oh my gosh, now I have to do it. So, you know, it was a quick scramble, and fortunately got to meet some people who are here tonight to help me learn about the issues facing immigrants who come from India and live here and go back and forth. And, you know, what I really wanted to do, and the reason why KUOW was interested in this topic, is you may know this area has one of the fastest growing Indian communities in the whole country. So looking at the census data, that really jumped out at me that, wow, there's just a boom here, and it's been going on since Microsoft, and it just continued to grow and grow. And we wanted to know more about this community, who you are, the issues that you care about. We wanted to kind of form a deeper partnership in storytelling that is relevant to your lives. So we got to do the series, and now this is 2.0. This is bringing those stories out into the community and having the community tell us more about you and your stories coming here directly from the mic. So thank you to everyone who's been a part of this night and who's here right now. So I have a few people to thank before we get started tonight. I want to thank Prathidwani. I probably mispronounced that. So Prathidwani, thank you so much for your help in putting this together. And Tazvir, also a big thank you for Tazvir and their help. And really, without them, this wouldn't have happened. We wanted to set out and create an event together, partnering with two really strong Indian American organizations here in the Seattle area. And it's been a fantastic partnership that we are excited to continue moving forward. Also wanted to thank Jaipur Avenue Cafe for the delicious chai in the lobby. And just a reminder that Tuesday is Give Big. You may be familiar with the big Give Big campaign, and those are all great organizations to give big to, whether it's KUOW, Tazvir, or Prathidwani, or others that are part of this event tonight. Just keep that in your mind for later. And then also, this is a story. Who here has been to a Storyvala before? Anybody? Nobody? I shouldn't raise my hand because I never have either. This is an experiment, so we are really excited about this idea of more community engagement, making our stories kind of more active in the public space, and having you be a part of it in a more meaningful way, and making this more of a ongoing, two-way, multi-way conversation. So thank you for being a part of this experiment. We want to keep it going with more topics, so leave ideas for topics and make sure you stay in touch with us, and we'll keep doing this in the future. Before I introduce our host for the evening, I thought I would just share with you a really quick anecdote from my travels in India. Since the topic is misunderstood, it seems like it fits so well with traveling to foreign countries. And there were so many great moments I could share with you. I had to pick just one. So I thought I'd tell you a little bit about my drivers. Who here has driven around in India? Well, I was mostly in very big cities with crazy traffic. I mean, you think Seattle traffic is bad, like, it's nothing. And it's so much more quiet than what you get in India. So I mostly used hotel drivers to get from place to place. And I was, you know, back-to-back interviews everywhere, every day I was there. And the hotel drivers were fantastic. So a friend of mine here in Seattle had given me a tip before I went, and she said, if anybody invites you for a meal at their home, a nice thing to bring for the host is just a little box of Indian sweets. You can get them anywhere. They're all over. Just, it's a nice little host to give to, or a nice gift to give to the host. So that was my plan. When I got there, my first invitation to dinner, I was, you know, ready to go. I booked my hotel driver. And on the way, as we got in the car, I said, I just want to make one quick stop to get these sweets for my host. And he said, oh, yeah, sure, we'll do that. And so driving there, it's about probably an hour commuting, like less than 10 miles, maybe 7 miles. It took us an hour just to drive straight down this street. And we arrived there to the place, and I look at him. I said, oh, what? We forgot to get the sweets. And he said, oh, we forgot to get the sweets. So first chance I had, it didn't work out. I walked in empty-handed. My host didn't care. Like, it was sweet. She made a fantastic Indian meal. So second time out, a few days later, got invited to do the interview over lunch one day at someone's house. So I thought, this time I want to make sure we don't misunderstand each other. I had the hotel concierge talk to the driver and just, you know, make a plan where we're going to stop on the way to get the sweets. So it's all agreed. Everybody's in agreement. We're all understood. And I get to the location, we pull up to the big apartment, multiplex building, and I look at the driver and said, we forgot the sweets. What about the sweets? And he said, I'm sorry, ma'am, there was no time for sweets. So he knew, this time he knew that I wanted sweets, but he just decided, you know, too much traffic, I don't know, I'm not going that way. And, you know, honestly, for all I knew, I'm asking this guy to, like, make a detour to SeaTac to get me a box of candy, like, in rush hour traffic. So he just made the call, like, honey, it's not going to happen. So my third time, I was invited to spend a full day with this really sweet gentleman. He was 82-year-old, who was going to show me around his retirement home. And this was one of my stories, was just about how people who have come, immigrants who have come to the U.S. and try to keep up with their aging parents and try to manage their care, it's a big struggle for them and something that's really close to their heart. So this really sweet man agreed to show me around his retirement home and give me his perspective on this topic. And we had to drive. This was in Chennai. We drove about an hour outside of the city into this really rural area. The driver dropped me off, ended up being like almost 3 miles away from where I was supposed to be. So I was super late getting there. And, you know, ended up having to walk through this construction zone to get there. And I had all my reporter equipment bag on me. I was just sweating profusely by the time I finally arrived. And he's there, and it turns out we missed a whole program he'd set up to bring me to meet people and get there, and everybody was napping now, which, you know, for a radio reporter, napping is a nightmare. So anyway, I was so excited to meet him, and I go into my bag to bring out my sweets that I had bought ahead of time, thinking ahead, I'd bought these sweets, pull out my bag. Oh, I left them in the car. So there you go. But the great thing about these drivers is they were fantastic on the road. They got me safely where I needed to be every time. And really, they were concerned about my safety and where I needed to be. So we might have miscommunicated on the small things and misunderstood each other. But really, when it came down to what matters, I think we connected just fine. Oh, and a note to self, next time I go back to India, I'm going to, day one, buy a whole big stack of those sweets. All right, now on to Miss Anish Seth. She is a singer, an actress, a producer, a director, a writer, an educator, an activist. I'd say she's a triple threat, but that's like seven things there. She was born in Pune, India. She moved to the United States at an early age, and she quickly found a passion for music and theater. She lives in Seattle, and Anish has done a number of corporate videos from Microsoft. Recently, she shot her first feature film. It's called Force Play. That's with Honey Toad Studios. Additionally, she's embarked on her first producing venture for the Seattle Fringe Festival with a one-act play called Sexual Healing. She also took on her first project as director for a multicultural playwrights festival at ACT last fall. And most recently, she's written a new web series. It's currently in development. Along with her work in television, film, and theater, she continues with her activism work with many national organizations. In March 2013, Advocate Magazine honored Anish Seth on their 40 under 40 list. So, wow, that's quite a list. I'm impressed. We're thrilled to have her as our host tonight, so please welcome to the stage Ms. Anish Seth.
Good evening, everyone. How are we doing? I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you. What? Okay, good. So now that we have that established, anytime anyone comes to tell a story tonight up here, I want it like three times louder than that. So let me hear it again. Yes, great. Tonight is about storytelling, and I see a lot of brown folks in here, and I'm sure as immigrants, we all have stories of being misunderstood. And tonight, particularly, we're sharing this theme of being misunderstood or misunderstanding, and it's a common theme for everyone, black, white, brown, whatever. So, even though this is a South Asian community-sponsored event and geared towards the South Asian community, anyone is welcome to come up here and tell a story. We've got some ground rules. First, you know about the clapping. The second is no heckling, Agastya. And just kind of really be really supportive of everyone who's coming up here and telling their story. It's not easy to come up here under these lights and be in front of all you judgmental people. No. So we're going to start with a really cool story. Here's the hat, by the way, if you haven't seen it. If you were walking around the lobby, you should have seen it or someone should have come up to you. Stephanie and Terry are in the back. They've got pieces of paper like this one where you can write your name, where you're from, and a little tagline about what your story is about. They're kind of waving their hands in the back there. And I encourage everyone to go up and put your name in the hat. We may not get to everybody because there's a lot of you here, but I would love to see what we can get in the hat, and I would love to get a bunch of stories up here. And we've got a good collection already. So we're going to start with Joyce from New Delhi. And she wants to tell a story about cultural differences and interpersonal interactions. So let's welcome to the stage Joyce.
Thank you, Anish, for the wonderful welcome, and I'm really happy to be here. And I have a lousy memory, so I have little pieces of paper to help me. As a child, I loved telling stories. I loved telling jokes. I fancied myself to be a fun person as well as a funny person. So even at the age of 5, I would take a lot of effort to memorize jokes, to remember punchlines, and then I would never lose an opportunity to let one loose. When I was 6 and just about developing my vocabulary in English, in the presence of my father, who was constantly spewing Yeats and Shelley and the Bard, I decided that the word misunderstood was also kind of funny. I would quip in Hindi and say, English mein us ladki ko kya kehte hain jo kisi cheez ke niche khadi ho? The translation would be, what would you call a girl who's standing under something? And I would not give anybody the opportunity to say anything. And bam, I would say, misunderstood. Get it? Misunderstood. That was my first tryst with the word misunderstood. When I was growing up in Delhi in the 70s, the general understanding amongst young girls were that boys who were younger than them were just younger brothers. They fell under the chota bhai category, little brother category. And it was, seriously, nowadays people don't believe that, but in my zamana, in my times, that's how it was. And because they fell in that category, you could pull their hair, smack them on their head, not share your treats with them, put your arms around their shoulders. It was all good. So they fell in the smackable, punchable category and definitely not the kissable category. When I was in 10th grade, all my high school crushes were on boys who were in 11th class or 12th class. It's called grade here, but 11th class or 12th class. And it was really unthinkable to think of the boy in the 9th class as anything outside of the smackable category. Fast forward to 2001, I am fresh off the Microsoft Rapid Transit line between Delhi and Redmond. I felt lost. I was in a new country. I had been uprooted at the age of 32, all on my own volition. But then, I looked for familiar domains to feel connected. I wanted to have a sense of security, a sense of familiarity. Church was one of those places. It was such a delight to walk into church and hear the priest say the exact same words, after all it's Mass, that the priest in India would say. It was an immediate sense of relief. I was like, ah, that's very familiar, and I would feel good. So every week I would go and spend some time in the church, in the local church, and say the rosary. And I didn't see any Indian folks around. This was a long time ago. This was a long time ago when Crossroads, if I saw another brown person, I would be like, hey, Indian guy. Now I'm like, oops, so many people. Gosh, I should know these guys. I don't. But I'm sitting and praying the rosary, and somebody comes to me and says, oh, why are you sitting alone and praying the rosary? You know, there is a young adults group that meets in, you know, XYZ room. You should go there. So I said, okay, I'll go there. So I went and I met a bunch of really lovely single young folks. And I had a great time. I enjoyed hanging out with them. And soon I made a lot of friends and I became the exotic minority. I drank cardamom chai in the morning. I wore jasmine perfume. Some three people already asked me about the perfume here. I burned sandalwood incense in my house. And my skin is the color of double tall latte, extra hot, no foam. Everyone was so eager to learn about me. I felt very special and I felt very accepted. A particular young man who was about 10 to 12 years younger than me became really good friends with me, and we would spend many hours discussing politics, anthropology, cultural differences, immigration, and so on and so forth. And one day, I didn't have my car with me. My car was in the shop. And let's call this fellow Mark. So Mark tells me, hey, I can drop you home. I said, sure, that's great. So Mark drives me home, and I reach my apartment complex. We are in the parking lot, and I get out of the car and I say, thank you for dropping me, Mark. Would you like to come in and have some coffee? His reaction was extremely confusing. Like, he just kind of stared at me. You see, my parents taught me to be a good host. When I was young, if I went to see a movie or I went to a party at work or something and some guy dropped me back or a woman or whoever dropped me back, my parents taught me the polite thing was to invite them home, tell them to come up, have chai, have snacks, and say namaste to everybody. And, you know, you should know the person who's dropping your daughter back home. So I was just trying to be a good host. So completely, you know, not sure as to why Mark's face looked like that, I turned to him again and said, no, really, would you like to have some coffee? And he said, are you sure? Yes, I am. You know, you took the trouble of dropping me home. That's very kind of you. I would love to make some coffee for you. Said, okay, but are you sure? I said, tea perhaps, if not coffee. He still didn't look very interested, and I was thinking, oh my God, let me run an inventory of my refrigerator. Do I have milk? Do I have this? Is my house clean? Did I flush? What? And I started getting a little irritated. Needless to say, Mark did not have coffee that night, and I felt like I was a terrible host. Another time, a group of us from church decided to go see a movie. I landed up at Crossroads movie theater. Mark landed up, and this other person, let's call him John, he landed up with his younger sister, who was not driving yet. And then as we were waiting for the movie to start, John's girlfriend, who apparently had a fight the day before, lands up and, you know, to make up, and he's all excited, and he goes away with her. And his sister, who doesn't have a car, also goes away with her. So now Mark and I are left, and we have tickets for a movie. So I just say, okay, let's see a movie. And at the end of the movie, we are hungry, so we see a pizza store and we eat some pizza. In my mind, it was an evening where some friends bailed to go after their love interests and some friends ended up watching a movie. I went to work next day at Microsoft and my office mate said, "How was your weekend?" And by now I had learned that it was a perfunctory question and not really a real question. But I still decided to entertain him and I said, "Hey, you know what? This happened." And that's when he explained things to me and, you know, told me that Mark probably thought that you were on a date with him and he probably has a crush on you and so on and so forth. Needless to say, I made a note in my calendar thinking I need to have a conversation with Mark where I tell him he's in the smackable category. As I settled down, helpful colleagues at work and at church helped me with the process of figuring out, you know, what to do, where to buy your microwave. I discovered Home Depot. I discovered Best Buy. I discovered all kinds of big shopping things, Costco. The largest of everything just scared me. And it took me a while to get used to the fact that ice creams sit next to onions and potatoes. They never did in India. I was working on getting my driver's license. Knowing how to avoid cows and stray dogs and cats and finding your way through smog was apparently not a talent that was required here. I struggled to leave the one car distance. The desire to have my nose just 2 inches away from the car, lest someone should come in, was very overwhelming. Often, I got angry glares from the driver in front. Sometimes people would just brake abruptly or look back and, you know, dirty looks. And it took me a while to realize it was not just the one car distance. People thought I was tailing them. Most of my misunderstandings or being misunderstood happened in the first few months of living in the US. I have a long list that I plan to maybe cover in a book sometime, but there are some that are very fresh and they are relevant even today, happened to me even today. So I will finish with that. One. "Oh, your name is Joyce Paul. Did you change your name to come here? What is your Indian name?" Two. "You're Catholic? You go to church? Your parents didn't mind that you converted from Hindi?" My spiel about Syrian Christian Orthodox Church, St. Thomas, 52 AD, martyrdom, blah, 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 starts right there. Number three, "You speak Hindu?" I could. It's kind of doable, given that I have extensive training in an Indian classical dance form called Bharatanatyam. I could. Four, "I love curry. Do you use curry?" "I don't use curry, but I love curry too. Chicken curry, mutton curry, goat curry, mango curry." "You probably do yoga, and that's what keeps you looking so young." "Of course, I know all about yoga." "No, you mean yoga. No, yoga. Yeah, and I also levitate on demand." Six, "Did you move here just a month ago? Your English is incredible." British colony, folks, British colony. This is Extra Hot Double Tall Latte, No Foam, signing off. Thank you so much for listening.
Joyce, now I feel like I need to go to Lululemon and buy some yoga pants. Okay, speaking of languages and language confusion, I would love to invite Preeti from Woodinville to come up. And her tagline is, "We all speak English, or do we?" So, she's coming down.
Hi. Hello. I thought they'd forget my name because that's not an act I can follow at all. So I just came up with this about 20 minutes ago. So, please keep clapping. My story is we all speak English, or do we? It's about language misunderstanding. And I want to start by saying this is not a story that happened to me, but it is a story that I heard when I was a young girl in India. And once you hear the story, you'll probably find that there are it's got relevance and could happen in some form to all of us today. So the story is about this English lady who wants to visit India. And so she, writes to this owner of this guest house and says, makes a travel plan saying, I'm coming to India. And I just want to make sure that there's a WC in the house. Now, if some of you might have heard the term, WC actually stands for water closet, but it is also a term that the Britishers use for bathroom. Now, the owner of this guest house is a person from a small town, didn't know too much English, and he looks at this and says, I don't know what she's talking about. So he decides to go to a friend of his and says, can you tell me what this is? I want to get back to her. His friend is a priest and looks at that and says, WC? She means wayside chapel. So he says, okay, that's no problem. So he writes back to the lady and says, dear madam, it is with great pleasure that I want you to know there is a WC in the house, near the house. In fact, it is so close, it is only 3 miles away. It is in this beautiful coconut grove, manicured grounds. And it is open on Sundays and Thursdays. 250 people can go to the WC. My personal story I want to share with you about the WC is my daughter met her husband there. They loved it so much, they decided to get married there. What photos we took. Every angle you could take a photo. My wife and I used to go there all the time. Alas, my wife doesn't go there much. But don't worry, I will escort you to the WC. May I suggest you go on Thursday? They have an organ accompaniment. The acoustics are so good, you can hear every sound. People go there. Some of them, they can't wait. They make a day of it. Others, of course, wait till the last minute. And we're going to be fundraising soon so we can get plush seats for everyone. I cannot wait for your visit, madam, to take you with me to the WC. The lady read the letter, fainted, decided never to visit India again. I have not been misunderstood about WC or loo or bathroom. But I remember the time when I said, do you have a fag? The strange looks I got. Hey, I just wanted to have a cigarette. Or the look of almost horror when I said, can you open the dickie, please? Can you open your dickie, please? Dickie is what we use for the trunk of the car. Thank you. Centered in the chest where the breath is felt. When you're blessed by goodness, then the stress can melt. He destroys the knots, they can find your thoughts. Is everyone having a good time?
So I don't know if this is kosher, but we're going to try this. There are two similar stories in here, and I would love to get both of these people up here to tell their stories together. Is that something you guys like to see? Okay. So, forgive me. Tony and Biko? Yes. Oh. They're little ones. Let's cheer them on. Yay! So for some reason, when it said 10 to 12 on the paper, I thought, oh, they're sharing a story from when they were 10 and 12 years old. But no. Here you go. You guys got two.
Yay. I would have dressed better for this occasion. I just dressed with my Seattle attire. So our story is about when we went to India on vacation in December. Me and my little 11-year-old brother and my 12-year-old brother and my ancient 100-year-old dad.
So mean.
So we landed in Bangalore and we... And we went over to our relative's apartment to meet everyone, greet all our aunts and uncles, as many as every person has in this room. There's so many. We greeted them, and our cousin was going to play a pickup game of basketball with his friends at some park way over there, and so he invited us, and we went to play. And we played basketball with these 6'2" humongous people that were amazing at basketball, as we were just some kids from Seattle that really didn't have a big interest in basketball. And we got there, and we decided that this wasn't really what we would prefer to do, so we let them play their game of really competitive basketball while we went over and met some kids to try to get a game of cricket together. And they thought we were from India, so they went off, sang some stuff that we had never heard before, and we nodded our heads and said yes. 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 And maybe another yes, but we don't. And so finally we got the teams together, and this was a pretty open space. It was like kind of about the size of the baseball field in back there.
No, it's over.
Tony! This is Tony. Say hi.
Hi.
And so it is all dirt. There is some little grass patches on the sides where no one runs around, so it's not worn down as much. So we go and we start playing. And it is very hard to play a game of cricket with people that you can't actually talk to. So we ended up using lots of hand gestures. So if I didn't want to bowl anymore, I would be like... and they would be like... and I would have to repeat it until they got it. And we finally got a system going, and we'd hand them the ball, and then we kept playing, and I would look over and I'd see my cousin and his humongous friends playing basketball, but we still had a good time. And Tony was on the other team, so I didn't actually experience what his team was like, but my team, we were all really confused what was happening, because there was an American kid on the team that had no idea what was going on, and that had never played a real game of cricket with actual kids for
from India before. And so I was really confused. And so this is Tony. He'll tell you his experience with the game of cricket.
Oh. Fine. So,
you're on a team.
Yeah. Okay. So I never really knew how to play cricket, like an actual organized game. So when they told me I was up, I never knew that they were telling me that I was up. I just went up to bat. Yeah, and then they would sometimes say, like, no, you're not batting, or, like, have somebody else, like, take my place. Until it was my turn to bat, which then this guy, kid on the other team, he was pretty big. I think he was the oldest. He would bowl really fast, and I didn't really hit the ball. And then they soon caught on that I wasn't from here, and yeah.
Well, that is our story. Thank
you. Biko, is that how you pronounce your name? You got a future in show business, kid. You do. So I kind of want to shift gears now. We've heard lots of funny, entertaining stories, and this might be too, but the topic particularly stood out to me in terms of arranged marriage, because I think that's something that we can all relate to. And I'd like to invite Jay from Delhi to come up. Jay is going to share a story about his parents trying to arrange his marriage. I'd love to hear this story. We're already getting laughs.
Well, I'm really nervous, so hopefully it won't show. So this story takes me back to 1994. I was getting on in the years. I was 29 at the time. And I was not looking forward to my visit to my parents, because I knew what was coming. So I show up in India, and the very next day, my uncles and aunts all show up and tell me how it's time. I settle down. It's time for me to meet people and get married. And so I hem and I haw. I talk about needing to go see my favorite aunts. I go shopping. I procrastinated for 2 whole weeks. Finally, my dad said, no, this is serious. You need to meet some people now. So I said, I've always had this thing that I wanted to get to know someone, really get to know them before I married them. And they said, yes, that's no problem. You will get to know them. So a couple of days go by, and I said, no, really, seriously, what I really want to do is I want to meet someone. I'm happy to meet them. I trust your judgment. But if I like them, I'd like to stay in touch with them. Make sure we're really right for each other. Then maybe in a year, we'll get married. Yes, no problem. Whatever you want. So I go on and I meet one young lady, then a second. And the second young lady is promising. I think that we're starting to hit our stride. We're talking about the weather. And, we talk about what she likes to read, which is a big thing. I always think, you start talking to me, I'm going to start spouting book recommendations at you. So I was really, feeling really good about the conversation. And 25 minutes later, the door opens. And we're like, okay, it's over. Let's go. Sit down. So the meeting was over at 25 minutes. And I go home and I say, yeah, you know, I'd like to get to know this young lady and, you know, see if there's something here. And 5 minutes later, the phone rings. And as they say in Hindi movies, ladki wale maan gaye. So the girl who had apparently met with 53 other young men had decided that I was the one. I, on the other hand, as I mentioned before, was less sure. So I talked to my dad. I reminded him about how he had promised me that I'd have a chance to get to know these people. And it was, luckily for me, it was just 2 days before I had to leave India. And so, you know, my dad tried to explain to me, and there was a long procession of uncles and aunts who came back and told me how this was not the Indian way. And hadn't we raised you better? You know, you're supposed to listen to your parents, and so on and so forth. And then the day arrives, I'm supposed to leave India, I'm excited, I'm going to make my getaway without a commitment. And so I start to pack, the doorbell rings, it's 7 in the morning, and it is the mother of the lady in question at my parents' house, uninvited. My father, you know, goes to her and says, you know, look, my son is not ready. She says, okay. And then she proceeds to stay in my parents' living room for 7.5 hours. Now, I'm a very empathic individual, so I felt terrible for her because this lady obviously had her daughter's best interests in mind. And she was sure that, you know, after all this endless procession of marriageable boys, here was one that actually, you know, the daughter was willing to marry. But my father finally got up and left, pretended she wasn't there. And I was sitting out there with her, explaining to her, no, look, I'm not ready. And she said, no, I can't do, you know, I can't do what you want, but you must say yes. So long story short, I finally, you know, convinced her to leave. I said, okay, no, I'll get back to you. And I went to the bathroom and I said, I need to figure out how to get out of this. So I went to my dad and I explained to him what a flighty, you know, unsettled character I was. I had no income. I was still in graduate school. Who knows if I'd finished my PhD or not. I was very immature. No one should trust their daughter with me. Nobody. Finally, my dad said, oh, yes. Yes, son, I understand. You're not ready yet. Let's give it another couple of years. And so I made my escape. I come back, and 2 weeks later, I sign on. I decided it's time to take matters into my own hands. And I sign on to a lovely institution that some of you might remember called India D. It was a mailing list in the late 90s. And I think the next story will be about how I met my wife. Thank you.
Jay, there might be something to that 53 men. Do you know how hard it is for some women to get a date? Okay. So I only know of this name and this person through seeing him last year on stage, and I think he's a really funny guy when I actually met him in person. So I have no doubt that this story is going to be funny, and I'd love to invite Abhijit from Mumbai to come up. And his tagline is, misunderstood without saying a word.
So I was going to talk about misunderstood without saying a word, and I will. But speaking of marriage, I just remembered an incident. This didn't actually happen to me. It happened to my mother, who's sitting in the audience right now. So we were scheduled to get married on December 27th in 1992. It turns out that on November 27th, a big food truck arrived with food for 300 people. Somebody misunderstood when the wedding was actually going to be held. On top of that, when my mother told him that, what am I going to do with all this food? She said, well, the food's here. Why don't you just have a party? I'm like, 300 people. There's food for 300 people. So anyway, we did manage to get food on the right day, a month later. There have been several instances in my experience here in this country when I have been misunderstood. But I want to, this is something that didn't happen to me personally, but I saw it happening to a friend of mine in grad school. I'd been in grad school for about a year, and by then fairly conversant about how certain things are said and what they mean and so forth. this friend of mine who had just joined was talking to one of the grad assistants who was at the admin desk at grad school. And to cut a long story short, she was cute, he was interested. So she was asking him about, you know, where he's from and so on and so forth. And the question came to, you know, how many people are there in your city? And he said something like 12 million. And she said, really? No, get out of here. So he left. Or rather, he started to leave, and I caught up with him and said, no, that's not what she means. The second thing I learned, and this was my education, the second thing I learned was that when someone in the U.S. tells you that something or someone is interesting, it means nothing. It means absolutely nothing. Someone once told me, you're an interesting guy. And what I heard was, you're an interesting guy. What was actually said was, you're an interesting guy. So if someone says interesting, figure out what the context is. So now to the main part of what I want to talk about. I was living in, I was working, and me and my wife were working in Manhattan and living in New Jersey. Why New Jersey? Don't ask me that question. That's a whole different show. It comes, it airs right after the show, Why Bobby Jindal, Why? So in any case, we were living in New Jersey, and I used to do what 2 million other Americans, immigrants, residents of the tri-state area did, which is take the train back and forth from Manhattan to New Jersey. So I was coming back home one day, and I got onto the train. I'm sitting down, I'm reading something. This woman comes up to me and starts talking to me in Spanish. And I very politely tell her, I said, madam, I'm sorry, I don't speak Spanish. And she kept talking to me in Spanish, and I said, I'm sorry, I don't understand Spanish, I don't speak Spanish, and she got upset. She thought I was Hispanic, and I refused to acknowledge my heritage. And I said, no, I'm from India. Right? I know you guys have a lot of reservations about Indians, but I really am from India. So she didn't believe me for a good, you know, 4 or 5 minutes, and even while the train was going on, she kept looking back at me, and, you know, I'm like, what can I do? The second instance was very, I'd say, about a couple of months ago. And my, I was sitting with my boss at a bar, local here, not in, well, somewhere a little off of 990. Falls City. It's not. Yeah, I like, I work for a tech company, you know, stereotypical, I guess, right? I work for a tech company, and it's located in Falls City. You know, it's the new tech mecca of the Pacific Northwest, doesn't it? So anyway, we went into a bar, and I'm sitting there, and my boss, who happens to be Canadian, and oh, let me correct a misconception or misunderstanding here. Not everybody in Canada is a Sikh, despite what you might see as soon as you cross the border. So we're sitting there. We've had a pint. There's another gentleman who's clearly had one too many and has blown way past, let's call it, being pleasantly elevated. He's gone way past that stage. And he looks at me, and he points to me and says, "You write code, don't you?" And I said, "I got you there, because I don't. He writes code, and I just sell it." So these are harmless, largely harmless examples of being misunderstood without having actually said anything. But there is a point, and there is a line that at times does get crossed where misunderstanding can turn into something else. And you start going down a road, and that road leads you to Baltimore, Ferguson, Iraq. And so it is something that while we grow as a community here, I think we should be very careful of. Thank you.
क्या हुआ है हुआ कुछ नहीं क्या हुआ है हुआ कुछ नहीं है बात क्या है पता कुछ नहीं
Hi. Is this on? Okay, great. So I love dual identities, and Anita writes, "Where are you from? India and America." So I want to hear her story. Where is she? Anita's tagline says, "Wanting to be American."
So my story is not funny at all. So forgive me. So I was asked actually in advance to come up with a story for tonight. I sat down with my chai at my kitchen counter and a piece of paper and pen, and I couldn't quite think of what I was going to talk about, but I knew I would say my name, so I wrote my name. And I said, so tonight am I going to be Anita or am I going to be Anita? And so then right then I knew what my story would be in terms of being misunderstood. And so this story is about misunderstanding myself growing up in the United States. I was born and brought up in the Midwest. And I was the one of two non-white people growing up in my neighborhood and in my school, myself and one African-American girl. And so in those formative years, we were all there. There are some young people in the crowd. All you want to do is fit in. You don't want to be different. But, man, was I different. Well, first of all, I was brown. I couldn't hide that part. And, in fact, and my apologies to all the Caucasians in the room, I wasted a very good portion of my life wanting to be white. And so I don't know what you're clapping about, but okay. So it was very, very hard to be white or American for me because my mother wore a sari. She wore a bindi. She didn't drive for a very long time, which was very, very uncommon. And my house smelled like Indian food. And what else? I wrote some notes here for myself. Oh. And I used to spend my summers in India, to this exotic, faraway land. And let me also just preface that the town I grew up in had 3,500 people in it. So you can put that in context as well. So what were some of the things that I did to not be Indian? I never invited anyone to eat at my house. In fact, I rebelled against all Indian food for most of my growing up years. Always wanted the, American things, fried chicken and those kinds of things. And growing up in the Midwest where I grew up, laying out and tanning by the pool was an after-school and weekend activity of all of my friends. And that is one activity I refused to be a part of, because that just meant one more thing that would make me different, which is darker. And then I played lots of sports. And I know it's pretty common for all of our young Indian kids to be playing sports today, but, you know, back then, there weren't a lot of Indians, and especially where I lived, there were very few. And so no Indians played sports, but I played all of them, even as going as far as being the captain of my basketball team. And, thank you. But a funny thing about that, though, I'll just digress for a second, and maybe this is related, is my parents never came to one single sporting event of mine. And it wasn't because they weren't supportive. It just wasn't what Indian kids did. You know, just they would go to my spelling bee, but not to my sporting event. So the last thing that sort of really popped into my head as I was thinking about all of this was, one day this boy came up to me in school, and I think I was in high school, and he said, so you're from Indonesia, right? And I said, I looked at him and I said, yes. And then I turned around and I was like, why did I say yes? And I said yes because I did not want to engage in the discussion of being different. I just wanted to be a white girl in the neighborhood. And so, you know, it really makes me upset that I did that, you know, that I sort of denied who I was. And it really wasn't until post-college did I embrace that I am both Indian and American. And it didn't have to be a choice. I didn't have to reserve my Indianness for India. And something related, my daughter one day was asked recently, she's 10 years old now, I think maybe she was 5 at the time, she was asked, where are you from? And she said, oh, very confidently, oh, I'm both Indian and American. And I said, wow. I said, I wish I had that clarity when I was that age. And I'm so glad to see things like this happen, because community building within the Indian community in the United States today is what allows her to make such a comment and so confidently make that comment. So going back to my name. So what did I decide? So again, I was Anita with my Indian community and Anita with my American community. And having gone through this process of thinking about what I would say tonight, I really finally decided that I'm tired of being both. I'm tired of being one way somewhere else and another way in another place. And so today, I've decided, although none of my American friends are here, which is who this is most relevant for, but today, and from this point forward, I will be Anita. Thank you.
Anita. Right, I got it. I think we can all share your feelings of growing up, how we wanted to just be American and fit in. I think a lot of immigrants share that same story, and I think that's what that clap was for. So good on you to share that. Thank you. I know that was really personal. Before we close the evening, we're going to have one more story, but I want to remind you guys of a few things. Tuesday is Give Big. That's what it's called, Give Big. So reach in your pockets and give big. It helps make things like this happen. Donate to Pratidwani, to Tasvir. They host events. We are hoping to hold this again with different topics, so if you want to see more of that, definitely give. But it also helps produce things like the main stage this year, Dance Like a Man, which is going to be at ACT and opens July 24th. Y'all heard that. At ACT Theater, downtown in Seattle. So definitely reach in your pockets, give big, and support the arts, because we need more stuff like this. To close out the evening, I want to invite Uma up. When she put her name in the hat, I really connected to what she wrote on the card, and I'm not going to even say anything. I'm going to let her story tell everything.
Oh, my God. Okay. Thanks. Okay, well, thank you so much, because I really needed that. And I want to start by saying that this story, or just doing this today, is in memory of my friend Yasmin Ahmadi. Those of you that might know her might know that we lost her this week, and she was a really, really incredible person and a gem in our community. And when I told her this story, she was like in tears, laughing, and giving me the best hugs. And so hopefully she's listening now and laughing too. Okay, so this is about coming out to my family. I came out to them 15 years ago. So I was like, I think 20 or 21, and it was like this really funny, I think funny now. At the time I was horrified. But, you know, my dad had called me. I was already living somewhere else. My dad was like, he called me and he said, I need a photograph of you. And I was like, why do you need a photograph, you know? And he was just like, oh, you know, the last photograph I have of you is from when you were, like, in seventh grade. And I was like, but why do you need a photograph, you know? And then finally he says, oh, because there's an ad on IndianMatrimonials.com for me. And I was, like, really shocked. And then I was like, I'm just going to go find this ad that he placed. So I think that site is now no longer existing. I'm sure there's, like, a billion other sites like it. But IndianMatrimonials.com. First of all, I finally found my profile. It was like the most hilarious, like I went into some sort of vortex at work. I was just like looking online, looking at this website, trying to find me. And finally found it, and my handle name was GoofyGal321, which I thought was hilarious. I don't know how he came up with it, but I thought it was really good. And then he wrote all these, things like, oh, you know, I placed in the 98th percentile with my MCATs. I was about to go to medical school, and my SAT scores were 1520, and I graduated with, you know, summa cum laude, and all these things that I would never, ever put on a profile for myself, and even things like, you know, when I realized, oh, you know, he listed all my accomplishments, meaning, like, you know, I did really well. I scored really well on tests. And, you know, so the next sentence I remember really clearly, it was like, I clearly have a lot of potential, but I'm doing social work. And at least at that point, I was like, oh, okay, anyone reading this is very clear. It's a parent writing it for their child. You know, because it's like first person, I clearly have a lot of potential, but I'm doing social work. And then the next line, it was like, I come from a liberal, tolerant family, caste, no bar. So that was liberal and tolerant in his mind. Little did he know, he had to stretch himself a lot further than that. So, you know, I finally find it. I visit my family, and I'm like livid. I'm like, I can't even believe you did this. I can't believe you wrote all these things. These are never things I would say about myself. Like, why would I advertise myself? And what do you know about me anyway? And what if I wanted to marry a woman? It just came out, right? It just, like, popped out of my head, and he was like, what are you even saying? You know, you are trying to kill me. You're clearly trying to give me a heart attack. You're trying to kill me. This is what you're doing. You're trying to hurt me. And that's actually how he's been ever since. He just feels like the whole thing is about hurting him, which is really unfortunate. But my mom, on the other hand, was really inquisitive. You know, she was like, well, I don't get it. Like, do you like all women? Like, do you like everyone? Do you like some? And I was like, I don't know. You know, like, it was one of those things. I was like, I don't like every man. I don't think every man is that cute. I don't think every woman is that cute. You know, I don't know. And it was like this kind of thing where she started to ask questions that I started to want to know how to answer. And we were actually, over the years, have developed that together, which was kind of amazing. And my sister at the time was like, this is right after that, you know. And I'm like, clearly, like, okay, Eka, we need to go and have a meal together, and we just need to debrief the whole thing, like, tell me how bad this is, you know.
And she was like, I don't know, I'm just really confused. Like, you just have to give me some time because the only person I know who did this back and forth thing is Anne Heche. Which, I don't know if you know who Anne Heche is. She's like Ellen DeGeneres' ex-girlfriend when Ellen DeGeneres came out on TV. And I was like, do you know Anne Heche? Like, were you having a drink with Anne? And Anne was like, I want to go back and forth between men and women. And that's where you... You know, like, what are you saying? I don't know. So she was really confused and didn't know how to do it, but I think she was, like, in this kind of, like, well, I want to figure this out for you thing. And then my brother, it was very much like he got up, left the room, and he was like, we just haven't spoken about it since. So don't ask, don't tell with my brother. Fast forward maybe to a few years ago. My sister visited with her husband and her two daughters, and my nephew, my brother's son, came that trip too. And, you know, we were all hanging out in Seattle, and we were in Seattle Center, and just hanging out in the park, and my niece said, you know, Penny, how come you're taking so long to find a boy? How come you're taking so long to find a boy? And I felt like, first of all, that question of, like, finding a boy, how come you're taking so long to find a boy, is like, how many of us have heard, like, you just go find one? And I was like, oh, I don't know why I'm taking so long to find a boy. And she's like, well, all you have to do, Penny, is, like, you go to a boy, and if he's already married, you can't marry him. But if he isn't already married, then you can marry him. And I was like, oh, wow, it's that simple. Like, if I had known these secrets to life, like, I wouldn't be single now, because all I had to do was just go up to people. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. That's really great advice. But what if I wanted to marry a woman? And she said, oh, well, Amma says girls marry girls, so then you just go up to a woman, but make sure she's available. You know, like, make sure she's single. And I was like, okay, cool. And then my nephew... it was like, yeah, but that's really nasty. That's just gross. And I was like, oh, it is? And he was like, yeah. I mean, she's right. You know, she's right. Girls can marry girls. It happens, but it's really gross. So it was this moment for me that made me realize, oh, my sister, you know, in the last several years has really been doing her job, talking to her kids, and my brother clearly isn't. And I thought, okay, well, I have to figure this out. I have to figure out when I'm going to come out to my nephew and niece and, you know, have that conversation with him, because clearly it's going to have to happen for me. and then fast forward to maybe a month ago, I was at the Tyagaraja Festival in Cleveland. Does anybody know what that is? Okay, so those of you who do know, I had not known, but it is like the largest Carnatic music festival outside of India. There were literally, like, I just was like, what happens to Cleveland this weekend where, like, thousands of South Indians come into town? And just are at this festival. Anyway, so I was there with my brother. My nephew was doing, he plays the mridangam. He was competing. I went to support him, and my sister was there, and it was like a sibling family trip or whatever. And apparently there was an inquiry about me to my brother. And so my brother, like, was telling me the story, like, this is so funny. So-and-so asked me about you, and if you're available. And then I told her, oh, she's 36. And then she rescinded the inquiry. Like, she was like, oh, forget it, that's too old. And he was like, well, at least I didn't have to make something up. Yeah. And I know that that's his way of saying, I love you, kind of-ish. But it was also just really like, it's funny, and it's not. I don't know. But I also kind of feel like, you know, my parents, my brother, like, whatever they are, they live in a community that's different from the community I live in here, and so we can all navigate it really differently, and they can do whatever they want. But I think I have to give props to my mom, who many, many years ago, you know, way ahead of my brother and sister, she was actually battling cancer in 2006 and 2007, and I remember visiting her and having, you know, sitting with her while she was getting her treatments, and there was this nurse that came into the room, and she was like, Janu, she's gay. And I was like, really? How do you know? And she was like, oh, no, she told me she's gay. And then, to, like, the most surprise, like, I was so surprised, she was like, do you think she's cute? And no, she's, like, not my type at all, but I thought it was really lovely anyway. So thank you.
So I think we're going to have one more encore performance.
Yes.
Meenakshi from Seattle. Is she still here? And her brief description of her story is vignettes from way back.
So I'm the one who stands between you and release. I feel like Moses, let my people go. All right. Okay, so actually, Chips, my husband, had a funnier story, but he's going to do it for the next story, Wala. I suspect I could talk about a lot of misunderstandings. You know, when I was in grad school, my advisor told me to hang in there, and I had no clue what I was hanging from. Or when someone says, how you doing, and they walk right by you, not even wanting to listen to how I was really doing, that was upsetting to me. And then we've all, those who've been in grad school have heard of stories about how people ask you whether you're from India and whether you have snakes in the house or tigers in the house. I got asked those stories. I hope the level of intelligence has improved by now. But I had a friend in grad school, and he was from Nepal. His name was Om. Om was a different kind of person. He was a grad student with children whom we called lovingly omelettes. But... Om is a different story, another story, Wala, with Om. But I was one day complaining to Om and his wife and saying, you know, this is the level of ignorance. What do they think India is? Full of animals that creep into the house at 6 in the morning and then leave at 6 in the evening. And Om said, you know, I'm from Nepal. People don't even know where it is. I tell them that's where Mount Everest is. And do you know what they say? They say, have you climbed it? And I tell them, at 4 in the evening, every Nepali gets up, climbs the mountain, comes down. Okay, but I also want to talk about another misunderstanding, which is a really genuine misunderstanding that I had. And it's about my friend from grad school. His name was Lee Levine. And Lee was my grocery mule. So for those of you who don't understand, Lee had a car. I didn't have a car. So Lee used to go do groceries for me, and I bring them back home, and I would pretend to cook them. I didn't know how to cook, but he would eat things that were peppered and had lots of powders in it. There's another story about a friend who got stuck at an airport because the Logan Airport in Boston detained him because he had declared he was getting cocaine powder, and really was getting cocaine powder, huh? That is a different story, huh? Later I will tell you. But anyway, Lee caught me at the student cafeteria, and I had to write this down because it was so hilarious at that time. I was trying to remember this. And he said, I'm sorry you couldn't do your groceries. I hit a snag. And I said, snag? And he said, my muffler. So I'm going to stop here. Some people are getting one picture of a muffler, and some people are getting a different picture of a muffler. So I was getting A, and I think he was talking about B. But anyway, visuals aside, so I said, oh, your muffler, Lee, what happened? And he said, I was on Route 9 and my muffler fell. And I said, I'm getting a picture of Lee driving on Route 9 with his car top down and his car flying in the wind, kind of like Isadora Duncan. And I'm trying to say, you shouldn't be doing that. It's dangerous. That woman died with that muffler flying about. But I said, well, you know, I nod my head sympathetically and I said, oh, no, Lee, how did that happen? And he said, well, you know, I don't know how it happened. It just clanked and fell down and I had to pull over and go back and get my muffler. And I said, ooh, that muffler must be very special to you. And Lee goes, yeah, my dad probably had it too. He never had it changed. And I said, it's a family heirloom. I should be sympathetic. And he said, you know, when I got my muffler, there was a big hole in it. And I said, oh, so it was torn. And he said, torn? Broken, you mean? And I'm saying, this Lee needs some work with his vocabulary, you know? So anyway, I try to be, you know, nice to Lee. And he said, you know what's bad is it's going to cost me $300 to get my muffler fixed. And I'm thinking, was it Angora wool? Was it like baby, kid, goat, fur or something? Or Pashmina maybe? So I said, Lee, what was your muffler made out of? And he's like, metal, right? Mufflers are made out of metal. And I must have looked confused, and he said, well, the car shop people have told me that the muffler is going to be fixed soon and will be ready to go. And then I'm utterly lost. And I say to him, what does your car have to do with your scarf? And he said, what scarf? A muffler is a gizmo on the underside of your car. It helps to muffle noises. And I tell him, that's called a silencer. You know nothing, Lee Levine. This is my homage to Game of Thrones. So he said, no, you know what a silencer is? A silencer is what you put at the end of a gun, and I wish I had one. So did I tell you what Lee Levine is doing? I heard that he had dropped out of grad school and joined rabbinical school, and so he's Rabbi Lee Levine, and sometimes I wonder whether this exchange had something to do with him deciding to pursue another course. Thank you.
So, for the last story of the evening, I would like to tell a story about being misunderstood. Thank you. So my mother comes from a very, very strong family of very, very strong women. She has like four sisters and one brother, so naturally the household was just women dominated. It was no surprise to anybody when she decided to pick up her life and move 8,000 miles away to a little town in Pennsylvania with my dad. When she got married at the age of 19, which to me, I'm like, what, 19? I don't even know who I am at 19. So she moves to America, and she's starting her new life, and she's like, wow, I've got so many opportunities. I want to start a family. I want to become a great woman. So my mother tries to get pregnant. Unfortunately, she has three miscarriages, which is really sad. So she says to my dad, I don't know if I want to have any more children. My dad says, well, I really do. I think we should really have some children. Maybe we can adopt. My mom says, okay, let's adopt. So they go to India, and they get a beautiful little baby girl, and they bring her back to America, and they raise her the best that they know how. They're still not satisfied. They want more children. So they're like, all right, let's go back to India, and let's get another child. And they go back to India, and this time they get a little boy. And this little boy is their pride and joy, as many Indian men are in families. So they raise him as best as they can, giving him everything that he absolutely wants. When he's 4 and his sister is 11, she puts him in a sari. They take pictures and they parade him around and they're like, look, so funny, he's wearing a sari. Everyone thought it was hilarious. I look back at that picture and I can't believe that my sister put me in a sari. You're all really confused right now, which is totally okay. Yeah, totally okay. You'll get there, don't worry. By the end of the story, I promise it'll be clear. My name is Anish. There's no A at the end of it. People like to change it to Anisha to kind of make themselves feel more comfortable about it. About a year ago, I got married, and when I got married, I changed my first name to say Isha, because I've discovered when I meet a lot of Indian people, they have that same look that a lot of you have. Like, here's a woman, and her name is a boy's name. How did that happen? Anyway, so I go back to this story of dressing this little boy in 4-year-old boy in a sari. Little did the parents know that this 4-year-old boy every year would want to wear a sari more and more and more and more. He's 16 in high school and finally by himself at home. Nobody's around. So he sneaks into his mom's bedroom and takes out her saris and he puts it on. One day his dad comes home and catches him in the sari and is like, what are you doing? What are you doing? It's like, nothing, nothing, nothing. It's nothing. Don't worry about it. Finally, when the boy is like 25, 26 years old, the boy says to the parents, I don't want to be a boy anymore. I want to be a woman. And the parents don't understand. Like, what do you want? You want to be a woman? You just want to wear saris and go out? Of course, very conservative Indian people, they have no idea what to expect or even how to deal with something like this. So they do the best that they can. They introduce this young boy dressed in a sari. This is my son. Everyone's like, what? Who is this person? Finally, my mother, who had a very, very difficult time understanding who I was as a person, about a year and a half ago when I got married, my mother came to me and she gave me her jewelry wedding set. And she said, this is for you, my daughter. She finally understood who I wanted to be. So that's my story. I want to thank you all for coming to Story Wallace tonight, hosted by Preeti Dwani and KUOW. Remember to give big on Tuesday. You can give big before that if you'd like, to make sure that events like this keep happening. Thank you so much. Drive safe and have a good night.
Thanks for listening to this podcast of Speakers Forum from KUOW 94.9 Seattle. If you liked what you heard, you might leave a good review. It'll help other listeners find us. Storyvalas, an evening of storytelling, took place on May 3rd, 2015 at the Kirkland Performance Center. Presenters included KUOW, Tazvir, and Preeti Dwani. Thanks again to Anna Tatashev for our recording. Tune in next week for more great talks. For Speakers Forum, KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm John O'Brien.